Police settlements are costing the city millions. Tight budget times in Milwaukee are raising questions about police misconduct. There's more trouble at Lincoln Hills, but now it's staff members who are raising concerns about their safety. A new poll shows not everyone is on board with the Milwaukee streetcar. Foxconn is also facing mixed reviews. All that, plus winners and losers and your questions, today on JS on Politics. Welcome to JS on Politics. I'm your host, Mary Spacuzza. I spoke earlier with Journal Sentinel reporters Ashley Luthern and Kevin Crow about the city of Milwaukee and a lot of expenses that it's facing tied to police misconduct lawsuits. Here's what they had to say. Now I'm joined by Kevin Crow and Ashley Luthern, who are both reporters with the Journal Sentinel. And it's budget season, and public safety is obviously a big topic of discussion. You recently did an article about some other costs facing the city related to public safety that aren't just police and firefighter pensions and salaries. Can you tell me a bit about what that was about?
Of course. So during the budget hearings, there have been numerous concerns raised about public safety spending in general, but one specific piece of spending that comes up kind of year after year, but especially this year, has been the cost of police misconduct lawsuits. These are cases in which, you know, someone's filing a federal civil rights lawsuit against the Milwaukee Police Department, and they're really looking for some sort of, you know, they're looking at training and what happened in a particular incident, and these lawsuits have led to some really, really high costs for the city, which is self-insured, so that means taxpayers are paying the cost of this.
And what kind of costs are we looking at for these?
So as Ashley mentioned, the city is self-insured, and so every year they budget $1.2 million for these settlements. One of the problems is these settlements have surpassed, you know, $1.2 million for the past 3 years.
Just like one alone is more than that, isn't it?
Right. So a big one, for example, from 2015 is $6.5 million for a wrongful imprisonment lawsuit settlement. There's $5 million for a strip search, body cavity search settlement. And then the council is set to vote on another $2 million settlement in the next few weeks. So what they have to do is borrow. And then borrowing comes with costs. So just for, you know, five lawsuits from the past few years, the city's going to end up paying, you know, $2.6 million in interest and borrowing costs.
Is there something the city could be doing to try to reduce or prevent these kind of, either prevent the problems or reduce the spending involved? What are some of the proposals that they're looking at?
So one thing the council is really focused in on is risk management within the police department. And that's something MPD has also taken very seriously. In 2013, they created their Bureau of Risk Management, really started specializing and zeroing in on that. But part of the issue is some of these settlements that are coming up, they happen, you know, they're related to incidents that happened well before this was put into place. But some of the things they're working on is making sure that MPD has good early warning systems, flagging officers who may be generating a lot of complaints or seem to be having multiple high rates of use of force, talking to those officers and trying to address those early on, which ultimately, you know, we're talking about the financial cost to the city, but of course there's a real cost to, you know, people who are, you know, victims of misconduct, and a real cost in terms of community trust as well. So there are all these really important issues that need to be addressed. And MPD, you know, like I said, has this Bureau of Risk Management. They've been detailing their efforts with it before council. It appears that council's interested in maybe giving them some other support, whether that's through the city attorney's office or the Fire and Police Commission, the oversight board of both the fire and police departments, and trying to bolster those oversight functions as it pertains to these kinds of cases.
Obviously, as Mayor Barrett is talking about cutting 75 firefighters, 33 police officers, the city's looking to any way that they can have more money in the budget to try to fund some of those positions. Okay. Thank you both for your time. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
We've spent months covering the trouble at Lincoln Hills. Patrick Marley gave us an update earlier about new concerns that the staff are now raising about their safety. Here's what he had to say. Now I'm joined by Patrick Marley from our Madison Bureau. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, Mary.
So obviously Lincoln Hills has been in the news a lot in recent months. Much of that coverage has been focused on the treatment of inmates, but now we're hearing concerns about the treatment of staff members there and concerns about their safety. What are you learning?
Yeah, we're finding out about some staff assaults that have occurred that have really raised the concerns for safety for people who work there since this summer. I think that really spilled into the public realm when a student punched a teacher at the prison in the face earlier this month, knocked her out, sent her to the hospital for a couple of days. And then we learned this past Sunday, just a few days ago, that there were a couple of incidents at the prison that ended up sending five workers to the hospital. This has really got staff at their wits' end. They're saying they don't feel safe when they go to work.
And who's being blamed for these assaults and these injuries?
Well, the staff on the ground are really concerned about these new rules that have been put in place by court order. Inmates at the institution have sued. Judge found that the inmates' civil rights were likely being violated and said they can't use pepper spray as often. They have to curb their use of handcuffs and solitary confinement. And the staff feel like they don't have the tools they need to keep the population in control, that the judge's order has emboldened the inmates to act up. Advocates for the inmates say the problem is with the administration of the prison, that they just haven't changed their way of operating and haven't learned new ways to do things.
What about the Walker administration? What are they saying, and what are we hearing about what's going to be done to fix these problems?
So Governor Walker's administration is in charge of the prison. This week, the governor said that the superintendent of the institution stepped down in August, and they're trying to hire a new person to run the prison. He told the Secretary of Corrections that he wanted him to hire a temporary or interim superintendent right away. We haven't seen that hire be made yet, but would expect to see it soon. The Secretary of the Department, John Litcher, insists that the institution is safe for staff and safe for inmates. The staff is really pushing back at those claims, saying if you look at the run of incidents that we've seen in recent months, that is not true, that it is not a safe institution.
Well, thank you, Patrick. You've broken a number of stories about Lincoln Hills, so I'm sure we'll be talking about this more in the future as the situation develops. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary.
Now I'm joined by Christian Schneider in our Madison Bureau and Bill Glauber, a reporter here at the Journal Sentinel. And we're going to talk about winners and losers. Christian,
yes.
Who's your loser this week?
My loser this week, the news just broke this morning. Mark Halperin of MSNBC, who's also a famous author, of course, wrote the Game Change books, has been accused by a number of women for sexually harassing them on the job and in other places. So given all the news that's been out about sexual harassment in the in entertainment lately, he's been suspended, and I don't think he's going to be back. So for me, he's the loser of the week.
It's pretty amazing to see how the Me Too movement has really just continued. And we've seen everybody from, media executives, Harvey Weinstein. I was reading about a chef in New Orleans. It just seems like it's kind of the dominoes keep falling on that one. What about your winner?
My winner of the week is Steve Bannon, who, with the announcement by Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona yesterday that he would not be running again in 2018, it gives people like Steve Bannon and kind of his crew of insurgent Republicans, if you will, the chance to claim credit for senators like Flake and Bob Corker not running again. And now they can stake a claim to that they are the Republican Party. They are, the driving force. And we'll be seeing that here in Wisconsin, where Bannon has endorsed Kevin Nicholson, who's running in the Republican primary against Leah Vukmir. So I guess we're going to see just how much power he does have in the party. There's still a question of whether he does have that much power, and I guess we'll see here.
The party of Bannon. Okay. What about you? Who's your winner?
Well, winner of the week actually is, sort of dovetails with Christians. I think Jeff Flake. He was dead man walking politically, obviously, but, he decided to pull the plug on the race, but going out on the race, he decided he was going to go all in on, stating what he felt about Trump, how he had diminished the party, diminished the country, and whether you like Flake or not, he He took the best shot he could from the well of the Senate. And, you know, I think he probably, history may say he comes out well, may not say he comes out well, but he put it all out there. So good for him.
It's pretty astounding to see sitting senators from the Republican Party going after the Republican president and the Republican president, you know, in turn going after them with clearly just not a lot of respect for each other.
Everything we see right now is pretty astounding day after day. We're in a new political era. We're all adjusting to it. Some are adjusting tougher than others.
All right. What about your loser?
Well, the losers, I'm not going to point fingers on the problems at Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake. But what I am going to say is they're serious. They need to be solved for everybody's health, both the health and welfare of the students there, of the staff. And it's not good enough. The excuses are not good enough. And the state really needs to get its arms around this. This is a terrible situation up there. Regardless of your view on who's at fault, it needs to be put under control, and apparently it's not. It's really a bad situation.
And whether it's inmates getting hurt or staff members getting hurt, it's a pretty troublesome thing. So we're actually going to do a quick U-turn and go back to a poll that you had covered earlier this week, the new Marquette poll, which had some troubling numbers for the Milwaukee streetcar.
Yeah, it was an interesting poll. Let's set the stage, because Marquette University Law School normally polls statewide, and it's a horse race kind of poll. They do issues. But on this, you know, they have a new center, the Lubar Center, that's going to look at issues. And so for this, they did 1,200 people in the five-county Milwaukee area. And so they just polled there. And some of the numbers were troubling for some local projects, specifically the Milwaukee streetcar that Tom Barrett has been behind and that's going to come online, I think, 2019.
And late 2018.
2018, mm-hmm. Excuse me. And it only found 25% of the public believe that it would really be worth it, would pay for itself. And that was across the board in the five counties as well as the city of Milwaukee.
So you'd expect that in Waukesha, Ozaukee, some of the Republican counties that tend to be more anti-streetcar.
Even city residents say it's just not going to pay for itself. Now that
and I think people are probably not very happy with the construction of the... I know that there's been a lot of concerns about the traffic and getting tough to get to businesses or to work as you see all the streets ripped up downtown.
Now, what Mayor Barrett says in response to this, because there was another poll finding, and that was on the Miller Park tax, which, you know, back in the 1990s was a very heated discussion. A Racine legislator lost his position because he voted for it and was voted out of office. Very controversial at the time. Now more than 60% of people are in favor of that tax. So things can change, and that's what Tom Barrett says. The other big issue that was taken on was Foxconn, and I said it was a split decision mm-hmm. there. Again, not many people thought that it would pay for itself. Fewer than half, about 38%, thought it would be worth it, would pay for itself, the $3 billion in taxpayer funding for this project. But, you know, 54% said it would add substantially, do substantially well for the Milwaukee area economy. And that's, you know, whether you like Foxconn, not Foxconn, that's probably a pretty solid, you know, majority that say, yeah, if it's up and running, it'll help the local economy. I mean, they're talking about 13,000 jobs there. And there were a host of other issues. I mean, this was a really interesting, in-depth poll. You know, everything on race relations, where 63% said they felt that race relations in the community were worse now than 20 years ago. And then there was some other issues, even like popular items, you know, what's popular around, you know, what do people look at as popular? You know, 62% said hosting Summerfest was important. And the Brewers, sure. Bucks, State Fair, and the Art Museum also rated highly. And then
I guess this is what happens when an election is still a year away, as we get to get opinions on all kinds of stuff.
And then the other one that was sort of interesting was, you know, people were asked about, you know, did they like where they lived? And 27% said the community was a great place to live. 41% said a good place to live. So it's good that nearly 70% kind of like where they live here in southeastern Wisconsin.
That is encouraging.
But it was an interesting poll. And I think, you know, going forward, I think these polls, you know, aside from the horse race polls, I think these are going to be important polls to really take the pulse of what people are thinking about, where they work, where they live, where, you know, how they commute to work. Mm-hmm. These are important issues about daily life that I think they're going to be exploring over there for the next few years.
Right. It'll be interesting to see what Mayor Barrett does to try to kind of turn around opinion on the streetcar, since it does not seem to be.
I think he's just going to keep plugging along.
Okay. So we're going to do viewer questions, and Christian is going to be joining us back for this one. Hey, Christian.
I'm here.
All right. So, Christian, I'm going to send this question to you first. A viewer asked, what is Trump's tax plan? They also asked, how does it help rich people more than myself? I only have some high school education. So can you, I don't know if this specific person's situation, they do like the one-page tax return idea, but generally, what do you think is Trump's tax plan, and how is it going to help middle class?
Yeah, well, so they just passed the budget in the House, which kind of paves the way for the tax plan that they're going to be working on here in the future. They've got about $1.5 trillion to work with, if you believe the numbers. What they're going to try to do is reduce the number of tax brackets. They're going to try to reduce the corporate tax from, I think, 35% down to about 20%. Now, for the questioner, that may not mean a whole lot. If there's somebody who doesn't pay anything in tax, then it's going to be hard to see a tax cut. The only hope there, I know some senators are pushing for a larger tax credit or earned income tax credit, which may be refundable, in which case they would actually get money back. But I mean, this is kind of the discussion that we always have when a tax plan comes out, even in the state, where, you know, Republicans come out with their plan and immediately Democrats jump on it and say it's only going to help the rich. But Republicans come back and say, well, it is people with money that pay, you know, it's the top 10% pay 50-60% in taxes. So any tax cut that you offer across the board is going to, of course, help people with the most money because they pay the most. So I think that's going to be the discussion that you see going forward as Republicans work on this. There are some disagreements within Republicans. They're, of course, looking at things like the mortgage interest deduction and the state tax deduction, those types of things, whether you know, they can get rid of those. I know they floated a plan on limiting the amount people could contribute to the 401k plans, which I think would be kind of disastrous. I think they kind of just put that out there as a trial balloon. So
that did not seem to be popular.
Yeah, so those are the types of things I think you're going to see in the plan coming forward. I mean, you're going to hear the discussion, well, the rich get a bigger tax cut, but generally that's because they pay more.
But then, you know, they are going to blow a hole in the deficit. I mean, I think even right. You would have to agree with that, you know, this magical thinking about trickle-down economics, that these tax cuts will pay for themselves, has been pretty much debunked over the years. But, you know, as a Republican, how do they get away with that? And how do they talk about it?
Well, they get away with it because people see more money in their paychecks. And so they are therefore thankful for the tax cuts that they get, but yeah, there's definitely it of course causes revenue to go down. The hope is by cutting the corporate tax from 35 to 20, that you give these businesses an incentive to go out and hire more people, and so therefore you have, you know, higher salaries, you have more people working, that type of thing. You know, kind of get government off the back of business. And that's actually been kind of a losing message up until Trump, I guess, who's more populist in the past few years. It always seemed like Republican Party was looking out for business rather than individuals. I think that's definitely something the party needs to work on, is explaining to individuals how this can make a difference in your life, your individual life, rather than just kind of being a blanket giveaway to businesses.
I do know that, I mean, one thing about this, you know, for those not old enough to remember, this is not how tax overhauls are usually done. you look at the 1986 overhaul, that was a bipartisan plan. It took 2 or 3 years to get that plan through. This is strictly a Republican plan, freezing out Democrats. It's unlike anything that's happened, you know, on this larger scale. So it will be interesting going forward, you know, who takes political responsibility for this, and, you know, when the if and when the revenues don't meet the expectations, then what happens? Who takes the political blame? But this is not how quote-unquote tax reform is normally done in this country.
Well, and it obviously looks really differently than the plan that Tammy Baldwin and Cory Booker were here in Milwaukee talking about you know, their tax plan looked obviously dramatically different than the Republican one, and I don't know how many things they actually share in common of what they'd like to see done differently.
No, there's no common ground right now.
Right. All right. So, Bill, we're going to turn to you first for the next question. A viewer asks, is the mayor allowed to move money around in the city's budget into the streetcar budget? Can't he move money around to save the police and firemen jobs? So this is, obviously, it's a tight budget in the city of Milwaukee. They're talking about cutting 33 police officers, 75 firefighters. We're waiting for budget amendments to see if the Common Council can try to reduce those numbers. But what about the streetcar?
Well, right now, according to the mayor and his people, there will be no budget money going into the streetcar. That the streetcar is paid for through these federal funds, and now the operating costs will be defrayed by the Menominee.
Potawatomi.
Excuse me. I'm sorry, Potawatomi. Yes. My mistake. You know, throwing in $10 million in naming rights. So I think, you know, in the next couple of years, yeah, there probably won't be public money or money from the normal budget going into this. But, you know, looking out, you know, you wonder how the city is going to pay for this, you know, as the federal money runs out, as the costs rise. So, you know, it's a valid question, but it remains to be seen how it's going to be answered. I find the most fascinating part about this budget is that the mayor is essentially taking on law enforcement and firefighters and trying to get them to come along with him to, you know, push the state legislature to allow a half-cent
local sales tax
to pay for security. And, you know, the mayor and the unions are definitely at loggerheads on this. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, Tom Barrett, who, you know, has been criticized for not taking stands or having a vision in the past. I mean, he is taking a stand here, and it's interesting to see how it's going to work out.
And it's interesting because obviously these are unions that did not back him in the governor's race. They were some of the only unions who backed Governor Walker. Have been, you know, they had the recall petitions, not that they were circulating apparently, but that they had available at the
fire. And many of the members have moved out of the city now that they don't have residency, so they're not really taxpayers anymore. You know, I don't know what percentage, but there are some now who have moved out of the city. So it's an interesting fight. It's hard to tell where the public is weighing in on this right now. It's basically a political fight. You know, the police have their own set of issues with the public. The public views in some quarters views them in a diminished fashion. So I think it's one of the most fascinating issues out there.
And Christian, it's probably safe to say that the Republican lawmakers in Madison and Governor Walker are not coming around where they're becoming big fans of either the streetcar or the local sales tax idea.
No, and you know, for Tom Barrett to say, well, you know, people came around on the Miller Park tax. I think that's probably not the same type of comparison. I mean, because Brewers have a good year, then hey, people are all for the tax. You know, Bucks have a good year, people are all for the paying for the new Bucks stadium. So, I don't know that there's going to be that much enthusiasm from people for the streetcar that you see for sports teams, for instance.
And it's probably safe to say that the Trump administration won't necessarily be funding Tiger grants and the federal grants for transportation as generously as the Obama administration. So it'll be we'll have to wait and see when the streetcar gets extended and if that ever happens. So, all right. Well, thank you, Christian Schneider in Madison. Thanks, Bill.
Sure.
We'll be back next week for JS on Politics.